Hello, I'm Virginia Voice volunteer John Rowe, and I'm glad you've joined us for Community News. Today's program includes articles from the Henrico Citizen, the Petersburg Progress Index, and the Powhatan Today, and we will start with some stories from the website of the Powhatan Today, which is a part of the website of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. The first story has this headline: After devastating loss, Powhatan store owners vow to rebuild. This story is written by Rosalind Ryan, and it was published on the website on April 14, 2025. A family that has called Powhatan home for generations is working to recover this week after a raging fire destroyed a significant portion of their beloved local farm supply business on Buckingham Road. Gene and Pat Hertzler, who have operated Hertzler's Farm and Feed from their Powhatan farm since 1983, were at home around 7 p.m. last Saturday when they were alerted that smoke was coming from one of the buildings on the property. By the time they made it outside, flames were coming through the roof. Lauren Hertzler, the couple's granddaughter, posted a message on Facebook Saturday evening confirming that her family was safe and that most of their animals, with the exception of two parakeets and a batch of newly hatched chicks, had been saved. The store, however, was completely gone. The family has plans to rebuild, she confirmed in a phone call on Monday, but admitted that the loss has left them shaken. Lauren Hertzler is the third generation of her family to be involved with Hertzler Farm and Feed, which for nearly four decades has served the Powhatan community and beyond, offering everything from tools to farming advice to homemade treats. Now, she says, we are essentially restarting the business from nothing. Perhaps even more challenging to reconcile is the timing of the loss. The fire came just a week after the wildly successful launch of the Quarterfield Markets, a year-round indoor market that the family had spent nearly a year planning and constructing. The market building, which offered space for local producers to showcase products ranging from sourdough bread to handcrafted home decor items, was completely destroyed in the fire. Many people casually passing through the county over the years might not have ever noticed the red and white checkered sign on Route 60 directing them to Hertzler's Farm and Feed. But for countless Powhatan residents, many of them local farmers and livestock owners, the loss has been felt on a deeply personal level. Hundreds took to social media on Sunday morning to share their support for the Hertzler family, with many recounting how the family's business had played a key role in their lives. Some recalled childhoods spent visiting the store with a parent or grandparent to pick up feed, farm equipment, or homemade baked goods. Others shared how Gene and Pat Hertzler had shared invaluable advice on farming and gardening. My late husband always bought his tomato plants from there, and when my grandkids were small, we bought them chickens from the Hertzlers, said Susan Riston. Good people. I hate that they are dealing with this, especially during a busy time for them. For Angie Miller, a job at the store would eventually lead to a long-standing friendship with Gene and Pat. Going to work was an absolute privilege, Miller said, and my biggest gift was listening to Mrs. Hertzler talk about the Bible and Jesus. Powhatan would not be Powhatan without Hertzler's, Hertzler's Farm and Feed, the whole Hertzler family. To Kat Oliver, the store was more than just a place to buy feed and tools for her burgeoning farm back in the 1990s. Hertzler's is the heart of the community, says Oliver, who, like so many others, offered prayers for the family as they worked to get back on their feet. Lauren Hertzler said Monday that the family's number one priority is getting the feed operation up and running, adding that feed sales and deliveries could begin as soon as next week. A surge of volunteers from the family's church community and the Powhatan community at large has been helping them to begin to piece things back together, she added, and last Sunday was spent sifting through the store's machine shop and a storage unit to see what could be salvaged. Warehouses are being set up and logistics issues are being sorted out day by day, Hertzler said. Right now, it's one day at a time, said Hertzler, and the community support has meant the world to the family. The outpouring of love and support has been amazing, she said, and we are so thankful for all the firefighters who responded. They work so hard, we wouldn't have a farm left without them. The headline of that story is, After devastating loss, Powhatan Feed Store Owners Vow to Rebuild. The story was written by Rosalind Ryan, and it was published on the website of the Powhatan Today on April 14, 2025. Next from the Powhatan Today is a story from the sports pages. The headline is Catching Confidence, How Mazie Harmon Became a Force in the Softball World. This was written by Robert Fletcher, and it was published on the website on April 6, 2025. Powhatan junior Mazie Harmon has emerged as one of the most talented softball prospects in Richmond. A steady presence at catcher and a lethal batter on offense, Harmon has been one of the key pieces to Powhatan's success the past two seasons, and she's only getting better. Throughout her softball journey, she's had a huge helping hand from mentors, teammates, medical professionals, and her parents. As an upperclassman, she's been a leader on and off the field at Powhatan, helping the Indian softball team to an early 2-2 record, while being a key member of Powhatan's chapter of Morgan's Message, which advocates and supports the mental health of student-athletes. Harmon's softball journey started at 7 years old, bypassing the usual T-ball method most players begin with by going straight to coach pitch. At 8 years old, she was already playing at the travel ball level, joining B.A. Edge's 10-and-under team. For the past 3 years, she's been with the travel club Tennessee Mojo, which is based out of Tennessee, but features players from states such as Alabama, Kentucky, and Florida. In the early years of her playing career, Harmon was an unquestionably dynamic hitter, but it wasn't until she turned 11 years old that she found a home on defense, volunteering to play catcher at a Kerry Cobb-run softball camp. From that point on, she never looked back, still holding down a spot on home plate to this day. What makes a good catcher? To Harmon, selflessness and a team-first mentality are key to becoming great at the position. I would say someone who can be selfless but also confident, Harmon said. I think there's a lot of times where you just have to suck it up and understand that it's not about you and you're just going to roll with it. Early in her catching development, Harmon found a mentor in Alexa Peterson, a Hall of Fame catcher with the Oregon Ducks that competed in two College World Series and played 6 years at the professional level. Harmon met Peterson through the Hitting Vault, an online hitting program that provides drills and advanced hitting analysis. By sending videos of her own swings, Mazie would get specific feedback from the Ducks legend, which led to Peterson becoming a family friend of the Harmons. At 12 years old, Harmon made a trip to Oregon to visit Peterson and her family. She's helped a lot as far as guidance and recruiting and just life overall, said Harmon. Peterson isn't the only major influence on her softball career. Harmon credits her parents for always supporting her through her journey with the sport, especially when things got hard. My mom and dad, they've been a huge part of my upbringing in the softball world, especially my dad. He's been my rock as far as that goes, she said. In the fall of her freshman year of high school, Harmon went through a difficult shoulder injury that started with a game with Tennessee Mojo when she got caught in a rundown situation and slid back to third base. In the process, her shoulder popped out of its socket, beginning what would be a long process of multiple medical opinions and two more instances of that shoulder popping out. After the third time the shoulder popped out, Mazie was concerned. She'd dealt with different injuries before, but nothing quite like this. After two trips to the doctor to figure out the issue, Harmon sought a third opinion to get to the bottom of the ailment. I've had injuries before, but this was just kind of a thing where it was freaking me out more than anything, she said. Then I got a second opinion, and they said the same thing, but I had to stick up for myself a little bit in that aspect and be like, hey, something's not right. She got her third opinion and an MRI from Dr. Stephen F. Brockmeyer at the University of Virginia, who specializes in sports medicine and shoulder surgery. It was discovered then that she had a labrum tear, and during what was meant to be a 45-minute surgery, it also revealed that Harmon not only suffered a 270-degree labral tear, but had also torn her bicep tendon in half. Through it all, Mazie said her father was always there by her side to help her through that difficult period. He was there the whole way, guiding me through it and helping me get back to what I like to do, Mazie said of her dad, J.C. Harmon had 60 physical therapy sessions with Powhatan physical therapist Greg Toby over the course of 6 months. During that time, Toby helped her get back to throwing and batting. After 9 months, she was fully healed and ready to get back to playing. Since then, Harmon has been active on the field, already earning praise by the Richmond Times-Dispatch as one of 24 players to watch this softball season in the area. In the summer, Harmon and Tennessee Mojo traveled to Denver, Colorado during the week of the 4th of July and won a national power pool championship, competing in 12-day games in 11 days, one of which Harmon slammed a three-run home run against a premier Iowa club. It was the third year Harmon competed at the Denver-hosted tournament, which featured teams from across the country and plenty of college coaches and scouts looking for new faces to fill their rosters. I personally think it's one of my favorite tournaments that this whole travel world does, Harmon said. It's just so many teams there and so many different broad spans of competition. And then you've got every college coach ever there, so it's just a really cool environment, and I think it's a good point of competition. The headline of that story is Catching Confidence, How Mazie Harmon Became a Force in the Softball World. It was written by Robert Fletcher and published on the website of the Powhatan Today on April 6, 2025. We will move along now to some stories from the website of the Petersburg Progress Index. The first story has this headline, Reprimand Says White Petersburg Official Berated Black Police Chief with Racial Overtones. This story was written by Bill Atkinson, and it was published on the website of the Petersburg Progress Index on April 18, 2025. Petersburg City Council censured one of its members for allegedly directing a racial slur at the police chief during an argument after Tuesday night's council meeting. It is the second censure in as many years for Ward 4 Councilor Charlie Cuthbert, but the first time it was done in public. In March of 2024, Cuthbert was censured for actions resulting in disruption in the city's ongoing operations and negatively impacting the work of council after he was accused of trying to coerce city administration and staff into following his will. That censure was not publicly addressed out of consideration for Cuthbert's re-election bid to council, according to the beginning of the letter issued Wednesday. The Progress Index obtained a copy of the second letter confirming that action. Allegations of Cuthbert interfering in day-to-day operations were addressed in a September 2024 article by the Progress Index. Asked for the Progress Index for comment after Thursday's meeting, Cuthbert declined. The censure, which was signed by Mayor Sam Parham and the other five members of council, was made public following a 90-minute emergency closed session at the Petersburg Public Library. After the vote and adjournment, most councilors did not stick around, but Parham provided a copy of the letter to the Progress Index. According to the letter, Cuthbert got into a verbal altercation with Police Chief Travis Christian after the April 15th council meeting, when Christian declined to answer his questions about an ongoing criminal investigation. Christian reportedly told Cuthbert that he could not reveal details of the investigation and suggested another and time and place more appropriate. It was at that point, the letter stated, that Cuthbert started an unprofessional public spectacle and started loudly berating Christian in front of others, counselors, and city staff. He was heard telling Christian, "You and your department are failures and are not being held accountable," and continued shouting and aggressively entering his personal space in a threatening manner and scolding him with a pointed finger. During the heated moments, witnesses claimed he reportedly told Christian, "Get your boys in line." Cuthbert is the only white member of a council that represents a city with 78% black population. Christian and much of the police force are black. The letter did not state the exact wording Cuthbert used, but it insinuated a racial overtone. "Your statements and actions culminated in you making what was perceived as a racially discriminatory comment, referring to the chief and his personnel as boys," the letter stated. Under Section 2.5B9 of the Petersburg City Code, councilors are forbidden from interfering with any city administration service directed by the city manager or any other council-appointed official. Except for the purpose of inquiry, the city council member shall deal with such administrative services solely through the city manager, the code states. No council member shall give orders to any subordinate of the city manager or any other appointed city officer, either publicly or privately. No council member shall attempt to coerce or influence the city manager or other appointed city officers with respect to any particular contract or administrative action. In Petersburg, the police chief reports to the city manager. It is not appropriate for you to berate and interrogate city employees under the city manager's purview in public or even privately, the letter to Cuthbert reads. If Cuthbert had issues with a city agency or employee, he should have told city manager March Altman first and let Altman handle it. Aside from being extremely unprofessional, your actions again have resulted in a disruption in the city's ongoing operations and contributed to low morale and negative public perception of the city, the letter read. Moreover, your efforts to seek access to information concerning an ongoing felony criminal investigation are likewise disruptive and improper. Virginia State Code reads censure as discipline and cannot be the sole reason for a city council member to be removed from office. Councilors can only be removed from office by petition from their constituents that has to be agreed to by a court. Section 24.2-233 of the code cites reasons for removal partly for neglect of a clear ministerial duty of the office, misuse of the office, or incompetence in the performance of the duties of the office when that neglect of duty, misuse of office, or incompetence in the performance of the duties has a material adverse effect upon the conduct of the office. The last time that happened was 2017. A judge threw out a petition by the grassroots group Clean Sweep Petersburg to remove Parham and Ward 5 Councilor Howard Myers after ruling that the signatures on the petitions were not obtained properly. The headline of that story is Reprimand Says White Petersburg Official Berated Black Police Chief with Racial Overtones. This story was written by Bill Atkinson, and it was published on the website of the Petersburg Progress Index on April 18, 2025. Next from the Petersburg Progress Index website is a story with this headline, We Have Enough. Petersburg residents, city council, push back against a new vape shop. This story was written by Ali Pichon, and it was published on the website of the Petersburg Progress Index on April 17, 2025. Petersburg city council members resoundingly rejected a request to open a new vape and tobacco shop at 3209 South Crater Road during its meeting on April 15th, expressing concerns about the proliferation of vape shops and their negative impact on the city's image and youth. In the spring of 2024, the City Council asked the Department of Planning and Community Development to present a recommendation on whether to limit the allowable use of recreational substance shops, including vape shops. The department staff recommended that such shops be allowed in three areas: neighborhood business district zones, commercial areas, and industrial zones. But in July, City Council voted to allow the shops in industrial zones only. John Brian Robinson, owner of Crater Center LLC, a company that owns several properties in the city, recently submitted a request to amend the city's zoning ordinance to allow these businesses in commercial zoning districts with a special use permit. Two residents spoke out against the request, as did a Petersburg City Public Schools official. Robinson made the request because he had leased the property at South Crater Road, which is in a commercial zoning district, to Akram Banaga, who planned to open a vape and tobacco shop at the location, according to Planning and Community Development Director Naomi Siobmak. Department staff recommended approving the request. I've known Mr. Banaga for almost 2 years, and he has contributed and invested in our community by opening two other stores in Petersburg with other landlords, in addition to wanting to open this third store at my building, Robinson wrote in a January letter to City Council. I encourage you to please allow him to open his store, employ our people, and pay taxes in our city. I can't tell you how many tenants have told me how much harder and more expensive it is to operate in Petersburg than other nearby localities. We need to open our arms to people who risk their capital to serve us, not tell them no. In his request, Robinson cited the original recommendation to allow the shops in commercial districts. He also noted that Chesterfield, Colonial Heights, Hopewell, and Henrico all permit retail vape stores in commercial districts. In years past, perhaps a vape store or marijuana store was considered seedy and unbecoming. That is no longer the case, Robinson wrote in the request. The Virginia General Assembly has now legalized marijuana and marijuana-related products and has given its unconditional blessing to vape stores. There is no logical reason that a vape store should be limited to M1 Light Industrial District in these enlightened times. Robinson added that Banaga had already signed a one-year lease and invested more than $120,000 in renovating the property. He said Banaga did so after going to City Hall and being told he could open a vape shop at the location. "I'm a longtime retail resident of the city of Petersburg and have operated stores within the city of Petersburg for years," Robinson said. "I love this city, and I want to see it continue to grow." Former Virginia State Senator Joe Morrissey spoke in support of the rezoning request during the meeting. "This is the second time that the Department of Planning and Community Development has recommended that B2 General Commercial be allowed, and that's what I'm asking for today," Morrissey told attendees during the city council meeting. "This is not a situation where somebody did not do their due diligence. This is a situation with somebody who owns several stores and was told that, yes, you can have a vape store here, invested the money, and did it." But Petersburg residents were not convinced. Two residents spoke against the request during the meeting, including Joe Battiston. Battiston, who said he strongly opposed the move, complained that a vape store had recently opened in his neighborhood and had been the worst neighbors he'd ever had. He strongly cautioned against bringing more vape stores into the city. "Most of their business is done from midnight to about 5 in the morning," he said. "And I can show you a text message I got from one of my tenants that one of their customers threatened him with a gun." School board chair Kenneth Pritchett also spoke in opposition. He emphasized that more students than ever are getting caught bringing vapes to school in Petersburg, and said that this was a growing and increasingly alarming concern within the district. "We've seen an increase in students vaping even on the elementary level, as well as the middle and high school level," he said, adding that some students were recently caught 2 or 3 times with vapes. Ward 4 Councilman Charles Cuthbert noted that Petersburg ranks last in the state's health rankings and admonished Planning Director Snow Moak for bringing the request forward and recommending approval after the council had already rejected allowing vape shops in commercial districts less than a year earlier. The headline of that story is, "We have enough. Petersburg residents, city council pushback against a new vape shop." This story was written by Ali Pichon, and it appeared on the website of the Petersburg Progress Index on April 17, 2025. We will move along now to some stories from the website of the Henrico Citizen. The first story has this headline, "Henrico's Tuckahoe Creek Park to expand thanks to land donations." This story was written by Tom Lapis, and it was published on the website on April 15, 2025. "The next phase of Henrico County's Tuckahoe Creek Park is beginning to take shape, buoyed by the donation of about 30 acres of land by 2 Henrico companies. The contribution of about 21 acres by the Wilton companies and 9 acres by the nearby Lakewood Retirement Community will allow the county to construct a nearly 2-mile boardwalk along the creek, which serves as the border between Henrico and Goochland counties, beginning near Patterson Avenue at 1128 West Briar Drive and continuing to the west. A private trail will connect the new boardwalk, roughly at its midpoint, to the Lakewood property just to its north. Construction of the new boardwalk section could begin in about a year and be complete about 2 years from now, according to county officials, if there are no unforeseen delays. "With the expansion of this park, we're not just adding more space for people to enjoy. We're creating a space where history and nature will come together in a way that will tell the story of this land, its past, and its future. Tuckahoe District Supervisor Jody Rogish said during an April 14th press conference at the site of the former Tuckahoe Village Recreation Center, a structure destroyed by fire in 2021. Wilton bought the site the following year, but deemed it too challenging for new construction and instead decided to donate it to the county, adding to more than 230 acres along the same creek that it had previously had donated to Henrico in the 1980s. The entrance to the new boardwalk on its southern end will be called Wilton Landing in recognition of the company's contribution. The new boardwalk will not connect to the existing half-mile boardwalk along the creek at Old Coach Lane and Ridgefield Parkway. County officials once had envisioned a continuous boardwalk or trail running along the creek from Patterson Avenue north to West Broad Street, but have concluded that it wouldn't be feasible. Instead, officials are planning for several separate sections of boardwalk, including another at the northern end of the creek near West Broad Street, thanks to a previous donation of 21 acres from Markell and Eagle. The new section of the park planned on the southern end will include parking at the Wilton Trailhead site, an overlook, a kayak and paddleboard launch area, and a fishing pier along the boardwalk just beyond the trailhead, a second overlook at the site of the private Lakewood Trail connection, and a third overlook at the boardwalk's western terminus. The new boardwalk will also include a series of educational landmark signs, Rogish said, explaining the land's former significance as the site of coal mining and railway operations. We are committed to preserving these pieces of history so that visitors of all ages can learn about the industrial heritage of this area, he said. The new sections of boardwalk and park amenities will be funded with $10 million approved by voters as part of the 2016 and 2022 bond referendums. Wilton CEO Rich Johnson told those assembled for Monday's press conference that the company was thrilled to play a part in the park's expansion. It's a great honor for us to be a part of this process and to be putting together what will probably be the most active and busiest spot along Tuckahoe Creek. Our company has a huge commitment to the outdoors, to sustainability, and this is just one more piece of this, Johnson said, pausing to note that the flight of several geese just overhead as he was giving his remarks seemed particularly fitting. The Wilton Company's logo includes a goose in flight. The county will host a community input meeting to display maps of the planned expansion and receive feedback from citizens. Our mission at Recreation and Parks is enriching lives and connecting communities, and that's exactly what this trailhead and property will do, Henrico Recreation and Parks Director John Zanino said. It connects communities to nature. We are super excited about this. Said Rogish, these collaborations exemplify what can happen when business can come together with government and residents to make our county a better place to live, work, and play. As the Tuckahoe supervisor, I'm excited to see this project come to life. Well, I said there would be stories from the Henrico Citizen, but that one was relatively long. Its headline was Henrico's Tuckahoe Creek Park to Expand Thanks to Land Donations. It was written by Tom Lapis and again published on the website on April 15th, 2025. And given its length, that's all the time we have today for community news. This program is available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org. I'm John Rowe for the Virginia Voice. Thank you for listening.